Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Friday, March 4th edition of Commodity Week. Well, the crop insurance numbers are set, and should a producer decide to use them, they can lock in a profit for the year right now. What else do they need to do, and why? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Floyd Gabler. He's the Director of Trade Policy for the U.S. Grains Council out of Washington, D.C. Our panelists today in studio include Matt Bennett, Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services from Oakland, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open our discussion today with this question. I've decided to take crop insurance at $6.01 for corn and $13.49 for soybeans. I know it'll lock in a profit for the year. Is my marketing plan done? Paul Cooley.
Hey, a special tip of the hat to Matt and Jackie and you, but particularly, Todd, the nice article in Decatur paper about the Outlook meeting in Macon County, and a big crowd and a lot of nice farmers and questions in that beautiful auditorium and Richland Community College over there. So tip of the hat. The only bad thing I hear about the crop insurance is, and it's a small thing, it costs a little more to buy it this year than last. I think you still have to have a sharp pencil, do a lot of marketing, and hopefully a farmer can sleep a little better at night.
Jackie Vakes?
Well, I think these are absolutely outstanding prices, and it's the truth when you say you can make money at it. I do think the one thing that is misleading is if you've got 80% of your crop covered at 175 bushel APH, which hasn't kept up with the real APHs, you still have 25% of that crop that's not marketed. So you can't just sit back and say, no, I'm done with my marketing. I think you have to be very careful about the way you approach it, because 25%, you know, let's actually look at the actual average price.
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I agree with what these guys are saying. I think whenever you're a farmer, you got to kind of attack this thing a multifaceted way. Yeah, the crop insurance is great prices. We have good profit margins locked in. But just simply to say I'm going to do crop insurance and walk away from it probably isn't a very good idea. There are other bushels to market. And considering what most of these guys have in their crop, they are at excellent profit margins right now. You know, I would definitely recommend pricing a portion of unsold bushels if you have crop insurance. You know, price 30 to 40% if you get above that price, the spring price. And then second of all, you know, a guy can always protect with put options if he wants to protect the downside, because, you know, probably the riskiest thing we could be doing right now is nothing.
Let's take a look at the corn numbers as they settled up in Chicago for the week. Remember, we give you the high and the low and the settlement price from the day trade, the overnight trade, the open outcry, and the electronic. March futures had a high this week at $7.35. The low was $6.99 3/4 in the corn pit. It settled at $7.21 1/4. March corn up 9 1/4 cents on the week. December futures were 7 3/4 cents higher than they were on the last Friday settlement. They finished at $6.09 1/2. Crude oil rallied and was finishing the week, the last time I looked, at $105. If that's the way they ended, they would have taken out last week's high in the lead month. Is this good or bad for the future of corn prices and ethanol?
Is it good or bad? Well, I mean, I don't think you can argue with the fact that that oil prices going higher is necessarily bad. I think what it's doing is it's certainly making it clear to the American public how much of an impact ethanol has on our current fuel prices. And so I think what it's bad for is fertilizer prices and all of the other things that are related to it and food prices. Those would be the things I think that are bad.
On the ethanol front, the Energy Information Agency reported this week that production was down week over week by 6,000 barrels. That's just 0.68%, but still, it's a drop. Do you think it's a sign of things to come?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a little earlier this week, Todd, and this is the second week in a row that we actually didn't go through the amount of bushels that the government says we need to get to what, you know, they're calling for as far as how many bushels we're going to use this year. So I think it's something that warrants a little bit of caution. It definitely tells you that something is a little bit off. I we've heard about a few ethanol plants 2 to 3 weeks ago that were struggling. I think this crude oil rally and ethanol actually going up has been very good for the ethanol industry. It's kind of saved some people and probably given them a chance to maybe go out and lock some profit margins in 2, 3, 4 months down the road. So it maybe bought some time for some people.
Well, a couple of things. We did export a lot of ethanol to Brazil. Their sugar crop's behind schedule. It won't show up until May. The second area is, of course, these runaway gasoline prices at the pump. Unfortunately, it's going to slow the U.S. economy down, and that's the bad thing. People probably won't drive as much. I think as far as the ability to blend ethanol into fuel, you know, that's alive and well. I think the real factor here is it does give the ethanol processing plant room, elbow room to function in the marketplace, and I wouldn't take too much alarm on this. I think profitability means that that's our number one market as far as corn is used, in my opinion.
Well, I think another thing we have to focus on too is we just can't put all our focus on ethanol production. We have to look at the DDG side of the equation. We had record DDG exports this year of 9.92 million tons or million metric tons. I mean, that's a big plus in itself. So it's no longer just ethanol like it was back in 2008. It's a combination of both.
Paul, can you take a look at both the old crop and the new crop? Remember, corn finished this week at 7.21 1/4 for the March nearby futures. December 6.09 1/2. That's a pretty good spread in that marketplace. Can the new crop gain on the old crop by very much? And are both of those a place that a producer might, and I know there isn't much old crop left, but might think about marketing some of their corn?
Yeah, my personal opinion is that there's two different worlds, the old crop corn world and the new crop corn world. The old crop corn, we did have a very popular marketing service in Chicago recommend to move, I think, 1/4 of their corn at 741. Believe it or not, the high was 742 today, and it was a bingo. There was some marketing. Probably we're high enough for the time being, unless there is a surprise China announcement in the old crop corn as far as purchases there. The new crop corn is the talk of the town is, of course, crop insurance and new crop corn acres. My humble opinion is at $100 an acre, we will get a pretty large acreage planted. The bottom line is at $6 corn out of the field, a person probably should go to at least first or second base with that.
You agree?
Oh, I would definitely agree. I think they're two completely different markets. And, you know, looking at the new crop, you know, guys have to distance themselves a little bit. I've had guys come in, they're kind of struggling with the notion, hey, you know, I can sell cash corn right now at 7, 7.10, 7.15. I want to wait for $7 on my new crop. And I said, you know what? The name of the game is profitability. Most of us, you know, in the Midwest, were able to lock in some really good fertilizer prices early last fall, and that was a general theme. We had a good fall for fertilizer, you know, application, completely contrary to the previous year. So whenever we have that ability to potentially lock in profit margins that we haven't seen, you know, in quite some time, 2 years ago some guys were able to see them, or 3 years ago some guys were able to see them. If we can lock those in, I think a guy definitely needs to be getting in there and marketing something. But, You know, as far as do I think it's going to rally or go back down, I get that question every single day on the new crop. You know what? It's not about whether or not I'm going to hit the high of the market. Am I going to make money this year coming up?
Well, I think that the reality is, and I agree with both the guys, you know, these are two totally different markets. You don't carry the types of overages on the nearbys unless they have demand that just doesn't want to quit. And, you know, the one thing about old crop corn is we know how much we have. You know, we don't know how much we have in new crop corn. So I agree with you, Matt. I think that it's very dangerous to say I'm going to wait to get to these types of cash prices in new crop. We really don't know. Let's take a step back to 2008. Nobody thought we'd have the acres that we had back then either. And guys tore up every piece of pasture they could find. So you have to look at them as just two totally different circumstances.
You look at them as two totally different circumstances, but let's look at new crop cash forward sales. I think you all told me how to do it. When should you replace those sales on paper, I think, is the question. What do you do to protect that sale?
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to clarify. I was a little high, possibly at 50, 60% marketed on new crop corn, but there's a lot of 10s. There's a lot of 20s. There's some 30 and 40%. There are some people that are very aggressive at 50. So I think somewhere in that 30 to 40, 25 to 40 is the correct answer. The reason I was a little bit on the higher side is my impression from the questions I get from my customers, there's a lot more corn sold out there than what people are telling me.
That's an answer to a question from our Thursday night event indicator.
Now, what can we do? The farmer does not want to buy, replace bull call spreads, buy $6 corn, sell $7, buy $7 call, sell $8. They think it's a total waste of money. My particular opinion is I'd at least have 10% of at least half of all my corn that's marketed covered with some sort of option strategy.
I got one who says, yeah, that's right. And do you agree too?
I don't have any problem with that. One thing I'll caution guys on, you know, nobody wants to come out and buy this corn straight up on futures. You know, nobody has that inkling. Whenever guys tell me, what if I sell my corn at 6 and it runs to 7? I said, yeah, but what if you go ahead and replace it? You sold it at 6 and then you lose a dollar on the board, then you're back at 5. So I just want to be a little cautious. I really like Paul's idea of option strategies, and I think a cautious approach towards this is best. You don't need to replace every single bushel, especially if you know you're profitable at the levels you sold at.
I agree. And when you talk about replacing every single bushel, I think rule of thumb isn't bad to replace at least 50% of what you have for sold bushels. But, you know, the idea of just selling into a market with no real signals that it's topping says you should have re-ownership. There's just no two ways about it, or you're going to find yourself disappointed. Now, if you're going to do futures, you can do a covered futures. You can buy a put against that futures. You can fix your risk. You still got to make profit, or you still got to make margin calls, but it can be done. If you want something where you know exactly where you're at, do the bull call spreads. I think it makes sense. But you don't sell into an uptrending market and then complain that you sold unless you just are determined you're going to come back in here and re-own.
Yeah, but I did it. How do I fix it now?
Well, that's a wonderful question. You know, one thing that the old popular deal is back in the good old days, we remember a farmer that bought 50,000 bushels during the October November time frame, and out of 10 years he made 10 to 20 cents and probably broke even the other two. Replacing at new crop is you know, in harvest time is a wonderful way to re-own ownership. The other way that I think we have to look at is use the 40-day moving average. When it's above it, stay bullish. When it goes below it, be bearish.
We haven't taken up the beans just yet. Informa Friday estimated the Brazilian soybean production to be bigger than it previously expected. That at 71.4 million metric tons, that's up 2.1 million. And it raised the Argentine soybean crop by 3 million metric ton to 52. Informa's numbers are also bigger than the current USDA forecast at 68.5 and 49.5 respectively. Did these numbers make much of a difference to the trade on Friday?
I don't know that they made a huge difference. You know, it may have stabilized things just a bit. But the thing about beans, we know that there's going to be a pretty good harvest coming out of South America. You know, we know that we are going to be somewhat tight going into the fall on U.S. beans, but there are going to be enough beans to get by. Once their beans start coming onto the market, I think that, you know, our basis levels today, actually, we lost 3 cents basis in our area. I think that it could be a factor once it, you know, dries up and they're able to get full bore harvesting. Exports might back off just a little bit, too. I wouldn't say I'm as friendly to the bean market as what I am to the corn market.
Soybeans finished this week like this. The March contract at 14.18 on its high, the low at 13.47 and a quarter. Settlement price was up 42 and a quarter from last week at 14.07 and three quarters. And the November beans at 13.61 were up 31.5 cents. How do you read the bean market?
Well, any way you cut it, that's almost 200 million more production out of South America. The second thing is that we're looking at is that I think China could be a big buyer of beans this coming week.
You bet. And you know, I don't think it affected the market very much today at all because we had a private group from Brazil that said 72 million metric tons a week and a half ago.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. If you're making your way to our event next Tuesday at the Beef House, that means you actually have a ticket. If you don't have a ticket, we're sold out and we don't have the room for you. If you're making your way there, please do come on time at 8 o'clock Eastern. And on your way home, you'll be able to listen to John Bondurant on our closing market report. So that's something to listen to and to be aware of as we head into next Tuesday. Back in just a couple of minutes, when we'll talk with the folks at the U.S. Grains Council.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The weather did settle down somewhat as we ended February and meteorological winter and rolled into the first week of March and spring. Last weekend was wet and stormy in Illinois, with showers and thunderstorms central and south and some freezing rain and snow north. Once that system departed, however, the remainder of the week was dry but cool. Temperatures this week were near to 1 to 3 degrees below normal across the state. However, by Thursday, temperatures began to climb over southern and central Illinois as southeasterly winds became established ahead of a developing storm system. Temperatures reached the upper 60s in southern Illinois and the low to mid 50s across central Illinois. It looks like we are in store for a fairly active period of weather over the next week or so. The storm system will affect Illinois this weekend and probably into Monday, bringing showers and thunderstorms to most locations. After a cool but cloudy break on Tuesday, another strong weather system will affect Illinois on Wednesday. Strong southerly winds should warm things up a bit, but it will also transport plenty of moisture into the Midwest. More showers and thunderstorms will dump rain on the state with this system on Wednesday, followed by colder weather for Thursday and Friday. By next weekend, yet another rain-producing weather system should begin to make its presence felt here in Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, March the 4th. Let's go through some of the rest of the numbers. In Chicago, wheat futures finished with a high of 803, a low at 764 and a quarter. At 24 cents higher, $8.50 was the final trade for the soft red lead option. July at 860, up 19 cents. Cattle finished the April futures at $114 and a nickel, down 5. The feeders in the March at 129.95 were up 12.5. And April lean hogs at $88.47.5 on the week finished $1.72.5 lower. In studio with us, our panelists today include Paul Cooley. He is at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson out of Champaign. And Matt Bennett, Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. On the phone line, Floyd Gabler, the Director of Policy for the U.S. Grains Council in Washington, D.C. Mr. Gabler, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be with you and your guest panelists this afternoon.
One of the things that agriculture has been pushing for quite some time is a series of free trade agreements that have yet to be ratified by the United States, though the agreements are in place.
Yes, Todd, that's correct. This has been a long, drawn-out process. We've finally begun to see some movement beginning last fall when the Obama administration reached an agreement with the South Korean government on the FTA in terms of some additional negotiations that they felt needed to be done. And we're waiting on the administration to complete a similar set of negotiations for both Panama and Colombia.
And why are they important?
Well, they are all obviously important markets. Southeast Asia, South Korea is just, you know, an important market. It's for corn. It's our, you know, it's one of our largest markets. Luckily, we have fairly good access to that market. Panama is another one of those. While it's a small country, it's got a growing economy and has great potential. But Colombia is really the strategic market in this hemisphere. Colombia is growing. Their economy is growing 4% a year. Their middle class is growing. The U.S. Grains Council has been in that market for several years, working with the livestock, poultry, and dairy industry, feed milling sector, trying to help them with capacity building and creating demand for our products. The unfortunate part is that while it's been a good opportunity for us, we hit a wall about beginning about 2008. And the reason is that Panama is a member of the so-called Mercosur agreement, which involves Brazil and Argentina. And under that agreement, they have preferential duty treatment of the basic 15% tariff that corn and other commodities face. So while we have to pay the 15% duty each year, the rate they have to pay is lower. And right now, this year, their duty is 9%. And so we've got a problem here where we're continually becoming less competitive in that market. In 2008, U.S. corn sales to that market was $635 million. Last year, they fell to $118 million. We went from a 83% to 18% market share.
Yeah, Floyd, you know, we've been hearing a lot of talk here recently about countries hoarding and building reserves. When we're focusing specifically on the corn market, U.S. situation is going to be pretty tight this year, as well as the world situation. What do you think that's going to mean for our exports? How do you think that's going to affect how much we have as far as exports? And you know, what's it going to do for us price-wise if if our opinions are correct as far as how much exports we have? Because most people feel as though they're going to be very strong throughout the year.
Well, clearly, we've seen growing demand for corn exports. China is a very good example of that, coming into the market last year in a significant way for the first time. Southeast Asia in general is going to continue to be a strong market. And again, the ability to continue strong markets here in Mexico and places like Colombia are going to put a strain on supplies. There's no doubt about that. And it remains to be seen, how much of an impact that's going to have on this year's price situation. We're going to need, I think, probably 93 million acres. I think that's what the market's probably telling farmers right now, that they need to at least produce enough to maintain levels at pipeline levels at their current levels and account for a growth in export demand.
Floyd, you mentioned helping Colombia with capacity infrastructure. How are we doing in light of all of the exports that we've seen? What's our capacity like at the ports as far as being able to handle things?
Well, as far as, you know, our own capacity, you know, that is, that has become an issue that's caused a lot of concern with us at the council. In fact, we are in the process of trying to get some funds through our foreign market development and MAP funding to actually do an infrastructure study. You know, it's clear we already have transportation constraints within the systems, particularly the lock and dam situation. But I think more importantly, particularly long term, and particularly if ag exports are going to move in a way that we think they will, certainly for corn and probably for soybeans for sure, we're going to have to make some serious investments in infrastructure, particularly to take advantage of the Panama Canal, which is going to allow these super Panamax ships and are going to require that our ports be at least dredged to 50 feet.
Floyd, do you feel that the Chinese will come into the U.S. corn market or the world corn market here in the next 30 days?
I think that might be a little premature. You know, there's been press reports out of China that they're buying, the government buying firms are holding back on corn purchases. They state the reason being high prices. You know, right now their food prices are very high there, and the government has taken action to really require that the major state grain buyers, you know, temporarily at least stop even importing or buying local purchases of corn in an effort to hold down food prices. So maybe, you know, the 30 days, maybe not, but down through the rest of the marketing year, I think that's a definite possibility, particularly given some of the estimates that we've seen for this year and on out to 2015 in terms of what China will actually have to import.
Floyd, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Well, you're welcome.
Floyd Gabler.
More than happy to do that.
Thank you so much. Floyd Gabler is the Director of Trade Policy for the U.S. Grains Council, and he's based in Washington, D.C. Now for a final word from our panelists in studio, we'll start with Matt Bennett. He's with Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois.
Yeah, I think that there's some really good decisions that farmers have to make this year. These are good times, good prices, and a very profitable year. And if it's managed properly, a guy can really do great this year.
Jackie Vex of Stuart Peterson.
I think that the opportunities that we see right now are probably the best that we know they're the best that we've seen in years. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't still give yourself some type of a floor.
And Paul Cooley.
I'll say hello to everybody at the Beef House this coming week on Wednesday.
Actually, on Tuesday.
Tuesday. How about Tuesday?
Tuesday is fine. If you're there, you can go Wednesday if you want. The Beef House is always good. We'll be there on Tuesday of this week. That's the 8th day of March for our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. Remember, that meeting is sold out. We sold 350 tickets, but there'll be more than 400 in the room. If you don't have a ticket, please don't try to make your way into the room because we'll probably have to turn you away on that morning. The good news is that John Bondurant will be on in the afternoon with us during the closing market report. Be sure to tune in on Tuesday of next week. I'm Todd Gleason. That's this week's edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.